Welcome, everyone, to the inaugural episode of the Bullpen Banter Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Ian Finlayson.
My name's Christian Larson.
I'm Evan Davidson.
And I'm Zach Phillips.
So, we're going to be talking about what it sounds like, baseball. We're all baseball guys. We all like to have a good time. You might learn something on this podcast, but you also might not. We're not going to, shoot out a whole ton of numbers and pretend to be the smartest guys in the world. We're not like self-proclaimed experts or anything like that. And I'm qualifying with this so that when we do talk about numbers, maybe it sounds a little bit impressive. So, without further ado, I think we're going to get into a little bit of Jays talk to kick things off.
Yeah, so we're going to start off with talking Yariel Rodriguez making his long-awaited debut for the Blue Jays in spring yesterday, going two innings, allowing one hit, one earned run, having one strikeout, but he also gave up a home run. But it was, all in all, a very impressive debut with the Blue Jays. Does anyone want to discuss how that went down?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I didn't realize he had that deep of a repertoire, honestly. When I heard him discussed before, I always heard people talk about, oh, he's a fastball slider guy. He profiles like, kind of that classic setup man, 1-2, primary pitches. But the fact he's got a six pitch mix, he used five out of the six pitches in that appearance through a split. I thought they only counted one split on Statcast there. I thought I maybe saw more than one split. I think maybe one of those pitches was, counted incorrectly, but I like how he changes speeds between the curveball and the slider with the breaking pitches there. I think that could be a good weapon for him.
Yeah, I just want to pose this question to you guys. I would assume he's going to start in AAA just because he's been hurt, and so they're kind of working him up. But do you see him being in the bullpen when he eventually comes up, or maybe taking that fifth spot away from someone like Bowden Francis or maybe even Manoah?
So, yeah, definitely it went right off starting AAA just because it's two more weeks until, or even less than 2 weeks away from opening day now.
10 days.
10 days, yeah. So I could definitely see him starting off in AAA, working out of the bullpen as a multi-inning relief role. And then eventually once he's ready and maybe for, like, knock on wood, someone doesn't go down with an injury and more than likely it's just due to bad performance, then he'll come up and help out in the bullpen as a long man, and then eventually, like, if we need him out of the rotation, he will be there. That's one of the reasons why we signed him to that contract. So, but overall, like, I like the stuff. I like the deep repertoire. It makes it a lot harder for opposing hitters to guess what he's going to come up with. And there's a lot of movement there. And he's also maxing out at 96 miles per hour his fastball. So there's a lot of deception there.
Yeah, no doubt. I think what's really going to come down to with him is limiting the walks and if he has control issues or not. His career walk rate across his professional time is up to 4.3 per nine. So he's going to want to get that down a little bit. But at the same time, he does get strikeouts. He's at 7.8 across his professional career per nine innings. So if he can come up, get strikeouts, he only had his one walk in his first spring training outing with 2 Ks to go along with that. So if he can control his walks, I think he's gonna be a factor at the major league level.
Yeah, I can see him taking in that Ross Stripling role, like when Stripling was very effective a few years ago, right? He's going to be the long man out of the pen, and then there were some injuries that caused him to move into the rotation. He did very well, and I feel like that's where they're going to ultimately have him. And also, if need be, I feel like he could also close games. I don't know if he's ever going to get to that point, but seems like he has the stuff to do it.
Yeah. Building off of that, I mean, he did win reliever of the year, in Japan. Yeah. Not last season, but the season before, because obviously he didn't pitch all last season. Just as far as like the repertoire and what Christian was saying, getting guys guessing, you could see that the guys were second guessing themselves after, he kind of showed a few different pitches there, and then he got a couple guys looking with that like third strike fastball, right? He kind of surprised them with that high velocity, getting up, like you said, 96.8 maximum. You can really surprise guys with that when you get it in their heads. Yariel Rodriguez is such a mystery. That's the big thing, right? He didn't pitch all of last year, the full year off since the World Baseball Classic. There's not a lot of data on him. You don't have the same kind of like Statcast metrics that you do for a lot of other guys to, you know, help look at underlying stuff like FIP and project future results. So it'll be really interesting. And I do see him in that swingman role as well, being able to come in the bullpen. You know, they're going to build him up, but obviously that's just because it's, you know, it's easier to build a guy up and then bring him to the bullpen and do the reverse. So,
yeah. While we're on the topic of Blue Jays making their spring training debuts, why don't we shift to the hometown boy and Joseph Votto.
Joey V from his first at-bat on his first pitch goes absolutely Yahtzee. I wish it was on the Sportsnet broadcast, but of course they had the Twins game and the Philly, he was playing with against the Phillies. But yeah, that was great to see him go and just take it absolutely yard on his first pitch.
And then he has to go and trip over a bat right after. Yeah. It's like a, you know, Michael Saunders sprinkler thing all over again. Maybe not quite as comical, but yeah, that's super unfortunate. I mean, I think he planned to play five innings and only got the one. From what I'm hearing from reports, it should just be minor and he should be back at it in a couple days. But I'm definitely more excited than I was when he first signed now.
So since we're on the topic of Votto, I mean, it's really early, but where do you guys seeing Votto play at opening day? You think he's going to start out at AAA, or you think he's going to work his way into the big roster?
I think it might be a little hard for him to make the roster right away just because he just started, right? We signed him, what, a week ago? And there's 10 days left to the season, and it's just a big ramp up. I know he's like been in the league for forever. He can do it if he really wanted to, but he's coming off a slight down year, right? No need. He's older. There's no need to rush him into the lineup. They have some bats. Maybe Vogelbach takes that spot right now. But I would not be surprised to see Joey Votto in a Blue Jays uniform playing in the Rogers Center anytime soon.
Yeah, me neither. And I think for that 13th position player spot, it probably is, you know, maybe a 50-50 split right now between Votto and Vogelbach. The Jays have shown in the past that they are okay with not using the 13th position player. You know, they've had guys like Nathan Lukes on the roster and have him sent down before he gets an at-bat. You know, they used it for Bradley Zimmer a couple of years ago. So if they were able to possibly better utilize that position player spot and get a guy like Joey Votto some at-bats, you know, against righties, you know, on a day maybe Justin Turner or Vladdy needs some time off their feet or something like that, that could be really interesting. Yeah, I mean, I was initially honestly a little bit pessimistic about Votto when they got him. I'm not huge on the older players with them also bringing Justin Turner in. You know, historically, people don't perform when they're at that age. If you just, you know, look at the numbers, I think it is a bit of a gamble. But, hey, I mean, we're here now, and it's not impossible. You know, it's predicting stuff is kind of a fool's errand ultimately. So outliers do exist.
Yeah, it's a fun story, right? You want to always root for the hometown kid. I'm happy that he's playing here. It's kind of like, you know, if you go over to the Leafs and past few years they brought in the guys like Joe Thornton, Wayne Simmonds, Jason Spezza, and now we're getting into baseball, right? Like, it's hard to not root for him. Everyone wants him to succeed, especially as a Jay. I think it's just gonna be a lot of fun,
and he's gonna sell jerseys too. Like, be honest, who's buying a jersey?
I probably will.
Yeah, I'm probably buying a jersey just for the vibes. Absolutely. Right, you have to.
I hadn't even thought about it personally, but now that you mention it, it would be hard not to.
Yeah, it's yeah. Cool, right? Like, it's something you have to have, even fake one, right? Who the hell cares?
Yeah, I think it's hard to see him like not playing a game in a Blue Jays uniform this year. Now that they've signed him, it is interesting if they'll bring both him and Vogelbach in, because I know they both have $2 million guaranteed at the MLB level. So if they end up, you know, giving them both stints, like let's say Vogelbach starts on the roster and then they bring Votto up, then they've committed, you know, $4 million to that 26-man spot, which in a vacuum isn't that bad. But then you look at like the IKF signing, you look at them giving, you know, another 10 plus AAV to Kiermaier, then it starts to get, okay, they've kind of put a lot of money into a few smaller roles, and they maybe don't have as much at the deadline to take on like an extra reliever or something like that. So something to consider, but I mean, I want to see him at the big league level, obviously.
Yeah, the Jays have put themselves in a really good position to ride the hot hand, like at all across the field, really, at the positions that are in a battle or in a up in the air. Like, if Votto comes out and he's hot like he has been throughout his career, or shows that he can be the hitter that he normally is, then I think they ride the hot hand. Or if Vogelbach gets a little streaky, they go with him. Like, I think they just have the potential to use the DH spot as not a locked-in piece, just kind of having someone to slot in there and really ride hot hands around the lineup.
I also think everyone wants to hear Milkshake as the walk-up song for the quarterback, right?
Oh, please. Yeah.
Apparently that's the walk-up song that he's using in spring training too, so it better be the one.
Yeah, he brought it back, which was really cool to see. Talking about, you know, Vogelbach, Votto making this, you know, kind of bid for the 26th spot or the, you know, 13th position player spot. You know, there's some other battles going on. There's been some debate between Santiago Espinal and Ernie Clement for that kind of last infield, you know, backup utility infielder spot. Do you guys have any opinions on that?
Yeah, so from what we've been seeing with Ernie Clement and what he's done in a small sample size with the Jays last year, I mean, I know Santiago Espinal, he used to compete in the All-Star game. Feels like forever now, but at this point, if we're just looking at the eye test and we're looking with the metrics, like Ernie Clement, he's putting in, like he's zinging some balls right now. And if you just looked at the numbers, he has 3 home runs, 8 RBIs, 361 batting average, and an OPS over 1. Like, how could he not have this guy in the opening day roster? Like, I think he definitely has the leg up over Santiago Espinal.
Yeah, the dude's got more home runs than whiffs this spring. It's pretty incredible what he's doing right now. I saw a lot of experts saying he's going to be in the big leagues this season, and it's going to be for some team. So I think that if he doesn't fit in with the Blue Jays, it might be a good trade chip, or it might be a good kind of potential leverage situation for the Jays.
And that's the thing, right? I mean, if he doesn't make the Jays, he is out of options. So he's going to be on waivers. Someone's going to be picking him up. And like you said, he is going to be a big leaguer somewhere based on his, you know, his recent results. I mean, you know, super tiny sample, but he did hit a slash line 380, 385, 500 for a 144 WRC plus last year with the Jays. And then, you know, if you want to get into a larger sample at AAA, again, 348, 401, 554, and a 136 WRC plus at AAA. So pretty monster numbers. I believe he hit 11 home runs and 57 RBIs as well in AAA last year. And I mean, he sustained it over the spring. And it's not like there's nothing that goes into those changes too, as far as the small sample noise. Because when you look at what's actually driving those results, he did make some you know, notable changes to his approach and to his swing, working with hitting coach Hunter Mentz, last year. So, you know, if you look at whether changes are real or not over a smaller sample size like that, because obviously the numbers don't necessarily bear out over time. You're looking at things like how extreme the results are, which they are, and you're also looking at things like, are there actual, you know, notable, tangible changes that are driving those results, which in this case, again, there are. So, yeah, I think Ernie Clement's the real deal.
Yeah, and also to add to that, Santiago Espinal, he has 2 options remaining. So, I mean, it doesn't hurt to use some of them now. And honestly, like, we've seen this before, right out of before opening day, there could be some last-minute trades that happen between teams that need to fill out their roster spots. And Santiago Espinal, he could definitely be a trade chip for a team that wants some infield depth. So that's not out of the question at all.
Yeah, they can just look at his tape from 2 years ago when he somehow was an MLB All-Star. I still remember that catch. Was it Cleveland or Kansas City to end the game? Running out in the outfield, making the one-handed catch, right? With his bare hand. I still like Espinal, but like just based on the numbers so far this year in spring, I don't see how you can choose him over Ernie Clement.
I mean, yeah, I can see them stashing him at AAA, and I think you could get something for Espinal. Like, I mean, I'm not high on him right now. It seems like, you know, like the consensus is with a lot of people that they're not, but I can see them getting something for Espinal. And then just generally, I wanted to get into the overall picture of the infield as well. Because right now, based on, you know, the last few lineups they've run out there, they have Biggio at second, they've got IKF at third. It looks like that's how things are going to line up on opening day regarding anything, you know, drastic changing. However, yeah, there are guys like David Schneider who are in the mix there as well. Obviously, everyone loves Davis the Babe Schneider. He's the guy. So, you know, there's also, and then Clement and Espinal are the other 2 guys in the mix there. So you kind of got 5 guys vying for time at 2 spots. Schneider could get some time in left, you know, against a lefty. But, yeah, I'm just going to spit out my personal opinion here. And I think that Schneider should be getting in there and that they should sacrifice a little bit of defense. They should maybe take IKF out of there more often and get some Biggio Schneider action between second and third, even though it would probably be Biggio's defense at third is a little iffy.
Yeah, so if we're talking about sacrificing defense, it really depends on IKF and how he does with the bat, because so far, very short sample size in spring, but it's not looking too great. I mean, let's not panic. He's definitely probably getting the starting gig at third base to start the year. But I could also see a transition where if he doesn't pick it up, then sacrificing some defense and having Justin Turner place in third base and now open up a DH spot for the likes of either Danny Burgers, Daniel Vogelback, or even Votto if he's up here. And then we see a scenario where IKF, he's going to be a platoon hitter against left-handed pitchers, and he'll be at third base. And then you can see David Schneider, like you said, he'll be playing the outfield, and then that means one of Varsho or Kiermaier, likely Kiermaier, to be on the bench when it comes to facing lefties. And then you could see like a nice defensive switch up later in that game when the starter's out, and then you could put Kiermaier as a defensive replacement and put Varsho back from center over to left field. And that's one of like the positives of having a lot of players that could play in multiple positions. You'll have the likes of like IKF, and that's probably why they wanted to sign him, is because he has that versatility, although we could debate that maybe it wasn't the right amount for this, the way we signed him at that time, considering seeing Ahmed Rosario and all these other players getting signed for like a fraction of what IKF is worth. But you can see IKF, David Schneider, even Ernie Clement and utility roles playing multiple positions. And even Biggio, he could not just play second base, but also play some first base and play some right field.
Yeah, like I love defense more than the next guy, right? Like growing up, I couldn't hit, so I made up for it with my defense. But I kind of miss like the Jays teams of a few years ago where they were just mashing homers, right? They were just as much fun as the team was last year, the years before that were a little more fun. They were incredible defensively last year as a whole, but at times really struggled with the bat, right?
Yeah, I think that's why it's important to find that happy medium. Like going back to what Christian said, I mean, I'm not ruling it out. I think we'll probably see it at some point this year, but I personally do not really want or think we'll be seeing much of Justin Turner at third base. He played 7 games at third base last year, and of course that does depend on the context that you're playing and the other players in the roster. There is more room for it here, but I don't love the idea. Who knows? Maybe I'll be proven wrong. And then for me, with IKF, like, I think I'd rather Ernie Clement, honestly, I'd rather Ernie Clement be playing third base than IKF. Like IKF has been well below league average hitter for consecutive years now. He had a 82 WRC plus last year. Zips projects him for a 78 WRC plus this year. He never OPS is over 700. It's always in that kind of, you know, 650 to 700 range. So I just think he's too much of a minus at the plate. And also he had 0 defensive run save last year across 805 innings. So I think his defense can be a little overrated as well.
Yeah, and that's a shame because he actually used to be a stud at third base and shortstop when he was playing over with the Rangers. I believe he also earned a gold glove for one of those seasons. It's going to be a short leash for IKF. Like if he doesn't perform, then he's probably going to transition to the bench, but who knows with John Schneider, right?
Listen, if they don't want to go the Brian Servin route while Danny's out, IKF used to be a catcher too, right? That's now back-to-back off seasons where they've brought in a guy who's very good at his current position fielding wise, but also used to be a former catcher, right? So if they really wanted to give Kirky a day off and put IKF back there.
So we have 2 emergency catchers now.
Yeah.
We have Varsho and now IKF.
I prefer the idea of having IKF as the backup catcher, as the emergency backup catcher, to him being an everyday player at third base.
Yeah, I saw Schneider shut down someone asking about Varsho getting behind the dish after the Jansen situation. So maybe Kiner Falefa is still on the table, but I know that for a fact, that Varsho got shut down, which is probably the best. We need him, his stellar defense in the outfield, but it's nice to have all these options on your roster for sure.
Speaking of options, what does that mean for Eduardo Escobar, the guy who's scared of cats?
It means nothing.
It means nothing. He's done.
I can't see it. I don't know. I don't think it's happening. Like the batted ball data from last year was just abysmal. You look at the Statcast page, it's all dark blue. I mean, again, you never know. I never like to be absolute in projections, but it seems like he's over the hill to me.
Personally. Yeah, he's declining.
Yeah, he's also up there in age, right? But while we were just on the topic of catchers, let's go back to Danny Jansen and how can you just not feel for the guy, right? He just seems he's always breaking a bone in his hand or his wrist and missing a few weeks at a time. When last year, when he was healthy, he was great.
Yeah. And then this is, of course, referring to the broken, I just learned how to pronounce it, pisiform bone in the hand, which I guess is not too bad of a one to break. It's not as bad as like the previous like fifth metacarpal. And there was another one as well that he broke, you know, so many, it's hard to keep track of at this point. But yeah, so right now, the information that's out there is it's going to be at least 2 weeks. Is that at least kind of condition on it? So, you know, most likely looking at more, especially early in the season, you want to make that full recovery. But yeah, with Danny, it's just, you know, all we want is to see a full healthy season out of this guy. Over his last 162 games dating back to September 2021, 35 home runs, 110 RBIs, 247 average, 325 on base, 505 slug for the slash line, and a 129 WRC plus, which is crazy because the average WRC plus for a catcher is 89. So that's, you know, it's got a 40-point WRC plus separation between the average catcher and Danny Jansen. So when he's healthy, he's one of the best offensive catchers in the league, basically, over the last couple of years.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. How can you not look at this guy and just want a full season out of him? He's going to be very, very hot on the free agent market this coming season. Hopefully the Jays don't let him get there. But his price is going to probably be a lot higher than we might be willing to pay for a split catching role with Kirk. But when you look at this guy and what he can do over a full 360 or full 162, it's pretty crazy. He's going to, if he can produce what he does this season, like he did last year, he's going to put his contract value pretty good.
And like, is it really that hard to like just ask for a full healthy version of Danny Jansen? It's like, is there someone with a voodoo doll of Danny Jansen and like they're just like poking needles at him? Like I can't help but feel bad for Danny Jansen. And this is also his contract year too. Like he just wants to have a full healthy year so he could actually maximize his value and get paid. So yeah, it's tough, but on the bright side, we do have Alejandro Kirk that could step into the role. And hey, we've seen Brian Servin hit 3 home runs in spring. So it's not the end of the world. And luckily, it's one of those injuries where he could come back from. But can we talk about maybe potentially adding some padding to his front hand whenever he's up to the plate, or like changing, having faster reflexes when he's at bat? Like it's happened so often now.
Just put him in bubble wrap or
yeah,
something.
Nah. Yeah, his stance brings him right over that plate. It's just the way he sets up and the way that he it's just his batting stance. And yeah, it puts him, it's very vulnerable. And we got to get this guy a full gladiator arm shield for when he goes up to the plate.
Yeah, and I know some people are talking about him not seeing the pitch. Like I was going through, I think Chris Black posted you know, a super cut of all the pitches he's taken off the hand. I remember last year, I think I'm not sure if I'm remembering this correctly. I could be misquoting this, but I think it was 7 pitches off the hand in a span of 15 games before he was ultimately out for the season. And yeah, like on these replays, sometimes it looks like he's not seeing the ball on the way in. Like he's just, it's getting inside. And I know he's vision impaired. I mean, I'm assuming he's seeing things at the plate because he's hitting the ball sometimes. But yeah, like it kind of brings into question if he's like, there's something about those inside pitches that he's like not seeing the path of the ball properly.
But at least Kirk's been slugging it pretty good in spring so far. He's got 3 homers, over 1 OPS, and only 29 ABs. Interesting though, he hasn't walked, which in his career he's been pretty good at drawing walks. So I don't know if that's a little something to be concerned about, but I personally am not very worried about it. I think he's going to be just fine. Shown in the past, he's a great catcher. He's a great batter. I think in the 2 weeks without Danny, he might be a little too much, just because it's the first 2 weeks of the season, right? You kind of got to work yourself back into it a little bit, but I think he'll be more than all right handling the job.
Yeah, with Kirk, what I'm noticing is I think the reason why he's not taking a lot of walks, or he hasn't taken a walk at all this spring, is he's trying to experiment more with making contact with the ball and seeing where that ball goes. Last year, he was hitting a lot of balls the opposite way, but now I'm starting to notice Kirk is starting to pull the ball more and trying to unleash that full power. And then we're seeing that with the three bombs that he's hitting in spring. I've seen some of them go like long and like pretty fast when he pulls the ball. That's how you get a lot of your velocity, exit velocity to come off the bat. And even a couple of opposite field power too at some of those games in Dunedin. I've noticed that as well. So I think Kirk is just experimenting with how he goes with his approach with Donnie Baseball and Matt Haig taking the wheel with the hitting strategy.
Shifting gears to the pitching side again. We mentioned Yariel Rodriguez potentially being the fifth starter eventually. Who do you guys think will be the fifth starter come opening day? I personally think it's going to be Bowden Francis.
So I would actually say the way things are looking right now, I don't think there's been any updates today, unless you guys have seen one, that Bowden Francis is probably lining up as the fourth starter at this point, because I don't think that Kevin Gausman is going to be ready to make his start as of right now, at least the way things are looking on opening day. I don't know if he's slated to start the year on an IL stint. I guess that's really going to be touch and go over the next couple days. So, yeah, I would say Bowden's probably looking at opening the rotation at number four. And then probably Mitch White would be opening as the fifth starter.
It's starting to look that way, considering that he threw 70 pitches yesterday after Yariel Rodriguez. It's starting to seem like he's going to be that guy temporarily until Gausman is healthy and ready to go. With Gausman, like, I wouldn't... Like, it's right shoulder fatigue is definitely a little bit of a worry, but, like, you definitely have to take caution. Like, it's 162 games. Like, you're setting up yourself up for around 30 starts. So even though it's not an easy schedule, definitely take Kevin Gausman, your ace, with caution and not trying to take any risks this early into the season.
Yeah, the last thing you want is for Kevin Gausman to have any kind of additional setback. You want to take it as slow as possible with him. I mean, that is a 3.5 win player last year. I believe it's almost 12 wins over the last three seasons, like 11.7 or something like that. So that's a potential 5-win player. That's huge. I mean, if Kevin Gausman is out for any amount of time for the Jays, that could be a season altering IL stint.
Yeah, and that's why he went out and got guys like Rodriguez and kept Mitch White around and built him up down in AAA last season. And we saw strides from him last year and this season with the fastball as well. So that's why he went out and got depth, so you didn't have to take chances on Gausman or Manoah and rush them in. And I think taking the time with Gausman is the best step, like you guys said. Like, as long as he is primed and ready to rock for the end of the stretch run, we don't need them in April and May. We've got guys that can get the job done in there.
All right, we're 28 minutes into the podcast and we have our first Manoah mention.
Yeah.
Okay, it's out. What does anyone want to talk about that?
Yeah. I mean, I still like to hold that hope that he can return to his Cy Young form or Cy Young finalist form. He was incredible that season, and then just last year, the opening day against the Cardinals, you could tell something wasn't all there. He did have a couple bounce back performances, and then ultimately the season just kind of went down the drain for him. And I was really excited to see how he looked this spring. He looked, from all the social media posts and everything, he looked well. He was very in shape. He looked strong, and he looked really good. And now he's out again, so I don't really know what to think of him at this point. I would like to think that when he's healthy, he's going to get a shot in the roster, shot in that rotation again. But I ultimately just, I don't know.
Like, at this point, I think with Manoah, like, it's just one spring start. Obviously, it didn't look good. It looked like he was still battling with command issues. And a lot of his pitches were sailing away from him and hitting opposing batters, especially right-handed batters. But, like, he still has options. With Manoah, he could just try to figure it out in AAA. Again, it might take a lot longer than we wanted to, but with the amount of depth that we've added, it should be fine.
Yeah, as you guys touched on, the starting pitching depth is night and day compared to last year. Like last year, they were looking at Zach Thompson or Drew Hutchison as the sixth or seventh starter. Now you got a deep kind of reserve there. You got Yariel Rodriguez, Bowden Francis, Mitch White. You got Ricky Tiedemann waiting in the wings as well. Paolo Espino even has looked kind of good in spring, which has been fun. It's not too much concern there. Anything I think you get from Manoah at this point is probably a bonus. I don't think you can look at it Mitch White's or, I mean, obviously you want Gosman back ASAP. So really you're just looking at one of Mitch White or Francis staying in the rotation, but I don't think you're looking at, those guys making two starts in April. I think you're looking at Bowden Francis as being the fifth starter for the foreseeable future.
All right. So let's keep on the pitching talk, but let's go elsewhere. I feel like we got to mention the Dylan Cease trade. So what do you guys think about that for the Padres and even for the White Sox?
So for the Padres, I think the Padres could be sneaky good this year. I think you look at Musgrove and Cease in the rotation. There's a lot of high upside there, high ceiling. Obviously losing Soto was huge. But you look at their order, they still got three, very high upside players at the top of it. They also were, I think, one of the most unlucky teams in the league last year. I believe they lost the most one-run games in baseball. And I think there was some underperformance there as well that could swing the other way. So I'm kind of high on the Padres. I'm buying Padres stock right now.
Yeah, he had his first outing yesterday with them. He got up to 96, 97 with the fastball. Apparently his secondary pitches were pretty sharp too. I didn't actually see them, but he gave up a hit, though. It was a solo bomb to Ji-Hwan Oh from the Twins, and he threw two innings. So all in all, a good start for him there in the Padres uniform. But yeah, I agree. I think they're going to be sneaky good. Last year, it was just so tough to watch. Yeah, it seemed like they had bad luck, and a lot of the talk around losing one-run games is well, you were one run away from winning them, but man, some of the way they were losing these games was pretty tough to watch. So for them to get a good full season with some better luck, I think they're going to be definitely a handful anytime you step up against them.
So my perspective on the trade is, this is a pretty good trade on paper for the Padres. It adds to their rotation. You already have Yu Darvish, you have Joe Musgrove. You made the trade for Michael King, and you also added some depth with that trade too, having Johnny Brito. So this only fortifies their starting rotation, but it also just makes me question if AJ Preller was just really bored because he hadn't made a trade in 2 months. So he just wanted to make another splash. So one of the pitchers that he had just traded away, he actually got in that trade recently with the Yankees, Drew Thorpe, and now he's heading over to the White Sox. They also traded another one of their top prospects, Jairo Arrieta, and also Samuel Savalo, who is a young outfielder, and also reliever Steven Wilson. This is also a pretty good package that the White Sox got. It's an impressive job by rookie GM Chris Getz for staying patient with holding out to Dylan Cease until they got the right package in return and waiting a little bit closer to opening day, because all that speculation was with Cease going away and being dealt has been active throughout the entire offseason, but now it was the good time to let him go.
Yeah, and just to switch it up here, another pitcher we could look in on is Blake Snell and what's going on with him. So the most recent thing is the Giants remain interested, and there's also a little bit of a connection there. As Heyman pointed out, Bob Melvin was Snell's manager in San Diego, Melvin taking over in San Francisco. So Chapman, also a former player of Bob Melvin, and he went to San Francisco. So I would love to see Blake Snell go to to San Francisco as opposed to, as say, Houston, get to stay out of the American League. But and then Yankees. I don't even want to mention how awful it would be if he went there. But, yeah.
I mean, has it ever happened before where the reigning Cy Young winner is a free agent come opening day?
I think I read that this will be the first time a reigning Cy Young winner has not started opening day the next season.
Yeah, like that's pretty insane, right? And I saw recently a report, I don't know how true it was or not, I don't remember who reported it, that he had a meeting with the team and the team balked at his offer, right? And as we've seen throughout this entire offseason, a lot of star players took a long time to sign. They weren't getting the contracts they were initially looking for, right? Cody Bellinger and Matt Chapman. And so it's just interesting how Blake Snell and even Jordan Montgomery, like they're both two very good starting pitchers in the league, both left-handers. Almost about any team could use either one of them in the rotation, right? And I know money's obviously a factor, but we're 10 days away from opening day, roughly, and they're still on the market.
Yeah, at this point, if you're like in Blake Snell's perspective, you start to get really nervous. I mean, you definitely still want to get your money for sure. That's why it's taking so long, because Scott Boras, his agent, he just wants to maximize his value for his clients. But it's also not ideal to start the season behind schedule. So right now he has to stay active and throwing. Apparently he was throwing for suitors just recently. Where do you guys feel Blake Snell will be the best fit in your opinion?
I mean, best fit? I don't know if I have an answer for that, honestly. I like the idea of what you were saying of him being on the Giants. I can see him in a Giants uniform. I think their pitching department there would be, you know, I mean, they're well known, right? They have a really good reputation. So I think that'd be a good place for him to land. I was going to say, like, I think him not signing to this point is really, you know, indicative of two huge things. I mean, we all know what Justin Turner, Jay, said earlier this spring about, you know, the free agent signings being delayed for a lot of Boras clients being a black mark on the game. I think it's really unfortunate, kind of the uncertainty that's been made by the regional TV deals and the lack of clarity there. And, these are you know, top-level, high-class athletes that should be on teams and people should be watching. I think the other thing it speaks to is just the volatility of, you know, people always talk about the volatility of relief pitching. There's also a lot of volatility in starting pitching. You look at Robbie Ray winning the Cy Young in 2021, and then you look at the year he had after that. You look at a guy like Blake Snell, who's won two Cy Youngs, but has also had multiple years where he has over a 4 ERA and is kind of like a league average pitcher, more or less. So teams' analytics departments look at that, and they are risk averse, right? Like they want to be putting money into what's going to have the highest likelihood to generate the highest value. And pitching is an area, as is illustrated by these guys not signing, that teams are very adverse to based on their probabilistic decision-making.
Yeah, I mean, I like Snell with the Giants as well. I mean, they got went out and got Matt Chapman, obviously, so I guess I don't know where that really leaves J.D. Davis on their team right now.
He's now with the Oakland Athletics now.
Yeah, he got DFA'd waived, I think.
Oh, yeah. My bad. Yeah. Okay, ignore that part then. But they also went out and got Jung Hoo Lee, right? They're in the division with the Dodgers, right? I feel like every team, obviously, as much as they don't want to admit it, you're kind of chasing them, right? They are the top of the division. They have been for a while. But they put themselves in prime spot to compete with them. And I would think at least compete for a wild card spot in the NL.
Yeah, like, so definitely could see the Giants just because they're in there in the wild card race for the NL with the likes of the Arizona Diamondbacks, especially in that division, and also the Padres. We also heard that the Astros were looking to get him. It seemed like it was going to get really close until recently. And then Bob Nightingale reported that Blake Snell was willing to go a little bit of a shorter contract, going for around 2 years for $66 million. So that would be a $33 million AAV. I could definitely see the Astros, although I think financially, I think they would have to pay more of a penalty if they want to get him. Another team in mind that should definitely go after him, and it'll probably make Mike Trout really happy, is the LA Angels. Because Mike Trout, at this point, I just can't help but feel bad that his prime years are being wasted away in that front franchise who just doesn't know. I just feel like Artie Moreno in that front office, they just don't know what they're doing. Like, I get, like, you're not going to be able to re-sign Shohei Ohtani, but if that's the case, I think probably trading him last year at the deadline and getting, like, a boatload in return would have helped replenish this franchise, and now this franchise doesn't really have a positive outlook for the next 4 or 5 years. And Mike Trout, at this point, I just can't help but feel bad, but I also respect the fact that he hasn't even requested a trade to this point.
Here's a question for you guys. At 2 years, 60-odd, whatever, million, would the Jays, would you like the Jays to go after him? Think about the Dodgers' rotation and how loaded it is. Would you think throwing the Jays in there, would you want to do that?
I would say no. And I would say no. I think it's twofold. Personally, I wouldn't like it because I'm just risk averse, and I don't think the Jays would like it because they're risk averse. They're always going to be like, I mean, and you can see it in their signings, all these 1 year signings of, like, you know, all the way back to like Simeon, Robbie Ray, get the Kiermaier back to back 1 year deals, the Belt 1 year deal, the Turner 1 year deal. They're taking these flyers on guys and they're not committing big money. They're looking to get the best they can out of a guy in one season with a lot of these signings. They're not looking to commit big money to someone who has an injury history.
Yeah, and, like, personally for me, like, just someone who's dabbled in the financial markets and, like, crypto and stocks, I feel like Blake Snell's, like, value is at its peak because he just came off an NL Cy Young campaign. I'm that kind of guy that doesn't want to buy at that high, even though his value has gone down a little bit just because Scott Boras has waited so long to this point. But it just, the fact that he was not even close to those conversations the year before, he was struggling to get through six innings. He also had some battled with injury history as well. All of those signs, like, those are like red flags. And even the first 2 months of last season, he was not doing well until recently, where he just got on a hot stretch to the point where it catapulted him into those talks for Cy Young and eventually got there. But all in all, I would not sign Blake Snell at the current price if I'm the Blue Jays.
Yeah, it does kind of go against the philosophy they've took since Atkins and Shapiro stepped in. Let's move on to O'Neill Cruz and what he's doing. It's pretty absurd. I've always expected this would come out of him at some point, and the exit velos on some of these homers are just mind-boggling. Seven now on the spring. All of them over 100 miles per hour on the exit velocity.
I think they're all over 104.
Yeah, it's just absurd numbers. Fantasy wise, I think he's going to be one of the best players this season.
Do you have him?
I do not have him, and I'm going to make it a mission of mine to acquire him.
Might cost you an arm and a leg.
Yeah, I think it's going to cost a lot of starting pitching.
Yeah, definitely. I feel last year, like, I was sad when O'Neill Cruz went out with that leg injury early in April. He was trying to slide to home plate, and then he just got caught up with the catcher, and he just broke his leg. It's really unfortunate. As baseball fans who just love to see home runs, I just feel like we're robbed of a breakout season. But now, we're probably going to be seeing that this season, I think. And we're just seeing that with spring training. Like, he's just popping off right now. Just going through Sarah Lang's Twitter, and she provided us with all the exit velocities from this spring. He hit two today. One of them came off the bat at 111.1 miles per hour. And the other one's 106.4. Like, at this point, I think the median exit velocities for all those hits has to be at around 110 in March. And even early February, that's insane. So he's well ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta love Statcast darling O'Neill Cruz. Like, to take a, you know, a bit of a wider lens and zoom out a little bit, I mean, he still holds the record for the hardest hit ball in the Statcast era in Major League history, 122.4 miles per hour. You look at his max exit velocities over the last three seasons; they're all in the first percentile, top of the league. He's got that 97th percentile arm strength, 98th percentile sprint speed. Yeah, he's just a monster athlete. Absolutely crushes the ball, and that's what we want to see. We want to see, you know, like these big impact, exciting, you know, the ball exploding off the bat, laser beams into the outfield. That's entertainment.
Absolutely. You just think about when he picks up a ball and fires it across the diamond, even on defense. It's like record-setting numbers. I know De La Cruz might have beat him last season, but to be a top percentile on both sides of the ball is unbelievable. I'm just trying to find his MVP odds for the season because I'm thinking about sprinkling a little bit on it. I think it's not a bad pick at all.
Yeah, for sure. He's going to be one of the breakout sleepers, in my opinion, if we're talking about fantasy and even for betting. Like he's a five tools guy, and the only thing that O'Neill Cruz, the only like blimp on his repertoire of hitting and his hitting strategies, he strikes out a bit, but that can be adjusted, and it's because of his hitting mechanics, because his motivation to just destroy the ball, that's the reason why. And he's a big guy, he's 6'7", so he has a big frame, and his strike zone is massive. So, but overall, like, he's going to be super exciting to watch.
Yeah, I just found it on FanDuel. O'Neill Cruz is plus 10,000 to win the NL.
That's a lot. That's a lot lower, or a lot higher odds than I thought. I thought he'd be a little closer to the top 10, but no, he's not there. He's not even close to the top 10, eh?
I don't know. Maybe you want to toss five on that, Zach.
Yeah, that's probably, that's a little, might be worth the investment.
Yeah. Yeah. No, with O'Neill Cruz, like, I mean, he, like, obviously these crazy numbers and everything. For me, I want to see him do it. Like, you know, you want to see him put it all together for like that extended stretch of time, and then it becomes real. But about, you know, you talk about a swing and miss and lack of play discipline. Who doesn't love to see that 300 OBP 500 slugging guy? Oof. It's a beautiful thing in all of our eyes. You know, he's swinging for the fences every time, and again, I just love the entertainment value that he provides.
Definitely a very unconventional leadoff hitter for the Pirates, but it's definitely one where like Pirates fans would just love to go to the ballpark and watch O'Neill Cruz at least have five at-bats every single game, and one of them like just absolutely pimps one over to the Allegheny River. Like, how can he not?
Yeah, absolutely. So still going around the MLB, do we have any other topics that we feel the need to touch on or want to touch on, guys? I know we're maybe going to look at divisions a little bit. Does anyone want to make any divisional predictions?
Before we go to the divisionals, Ohtani starting to start throwing again not pitching, but he could play the outfield for LA this season, which is not something I would have thought they would rush him into. I thought DH was going to be his home, maybe even sprinkle in some first base reps. But they are reporting now Juan Toribio, said could play outfield for LA in 24, which is interesting.
Yeah, I would have thought that he would just be stapled to the DH role, right? There's no need to rush a player of his stature back. There's no need to rush any player back in general. But someone like him, right, he's going to be pitching for you for foreseeable future. Why rush it, right? He's going to hit 300 around at the plate. He's going to hit 30, 40 bombs, driving 100 runs. Just leave him at that. He's already an MVP there.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that call, just considering what they've done with their outfield now. I know Mookie Betts is no longer in the outfield, but then that's why you brought back Jason Hayward. You now have Teoscar Hernandez. He's playing left field. You could also play some right field. And you also have utility players like Kike Hernandez and also Chris Taylor. And then you have Podges. He's gonna be something when he comes up as well. So I don't know. Like, I don't know what's the rush. But maybe perhaps Ohtani is just bored and he wants to throw the ball. I don't know.
Yeah, personally, I would be shocked if he were to play outfield this year with the Dodgers. Like, the fact that he's coming off, you know, it's an undisclosed UCL procedure. But yeah, I think the idea of a player of his value throwing the ball at all after a procedure that significant is, I don't know. I personally don't see it. I think it would be really cool. I think I would like to see it, but I don't think it'll actually happen.
So I found the quotes to give a little more context. He's definitely starting a throwing program when they return from Korea. After the Seoul series, Roberts confirmed that he's going to begin a throwing program. But he said, we'll see how the progression goes. I do know he's not going to pitch this year, which everybody knew that. But their focus is on him being a designated hitter. So I think the outfield time is going to be play it by ear. But I just think it's crazy that they're even put a throwing program after Seoul is even mind boggling to me.
They got to win the division, right? I feel like we're all in agreement there.
Yeah,
I think they're. I mean, unless Soto goes crazy with the Yankees or something and their offense explodes, I think they're my pick for having the best record in the league.
Yeah, I mean, they have a very good division outside of the Rockies. Sorry, Rockies, I love you. But Diamondbacks, Padres, Giants, right? All very good teams. All could very easily make the playoffs. Dodgers got to be the favorite there. Let's go to the AL East, another really tough division. Who do you guys have there?
Yeah, so I battle with myself between the Yankees and the Orioles. And I think when it comes down to upside and potential and just the makeup of their team, especially with the addition of Corbin Burns, I have to give the edge to the Baltimore Orioles. If you just look through that starting rotation now, you have Corbin Burns, you have Grayson Rodriguez in there. You're going to have Bradish come back eventually through injury, and same with John Means. But overall, that starting rotation is really good. And then how can we not talk about the prospects and what they've been doing as well in spring? Jackson Holliday, he might actually break camp with this team, the number one overall prospect in baseball. He's been doing really well. He's looking really well, even defensively at second base and even playing shortstop and third base. But it's likely he's going to be playing second base when he breaks camp with the team. Gunnar Henderson, we're going to have another full season of him. Anthony Santander, no one talks about him because he's like one of the oldest guys on the team, but like he's their main source of power, and he's whenever he plays the Jays, him and Ryan Mountcastle, like they're just always destroying us. It's at that point where it just gives us nightmares. But overall, I think that team is just, even though they won the division last year and people expect that they're gonna falter from last year, I just don't see that happening because of how much upside and how young that team is.
Yeah, I think the AL East is between, I mean, you never want to discount Tampa, but I think I would favor either the Yankees or Baltimore. The Yankees lineup looks crazy with Judge and Soto back to back. I think that's just going to be terrifying. And then, yeah, it's hard not to, again, by stalking Baltimore, just, you know, with those players getting older, you got more players coming up. You got, you know, like you said, Jackson Holliday, you got Kowser, you got Heston Kerstad, you got, you know, it seems like almost unlimited. Jordan Westberg is another guy that got the wishes. Like, it's just, they just have unlimited prospect depth. So I think the Orioles are going to be good for years to come. Yeah, Jays are definitely facing an uphill battle. And then the Rays have that magic formula to always be in the mix as well. So does anyone else have any comments in the AL East, or you want to move?
Well, I was just going to add, I felt like we were forgetting about Adley.
Oh.
Right? Yeah. Like, it took so long to name him. That just shows you how good their prospect pool is. But the kid's a stud. Right? He's going to be one of the best, if not the best, catchers in baseball for a very long time. He can hit from both sides of the plate. He's got a great arm. He's great defensively. I don't know. I think I have to give them the edge over the Yankees. Maybe it's just a little bit of bias because I hate the Yankees slightly more. The Yankees are the betting favorites. They're plus 150, but the Orioles are plus 200, right? So there is a pretty close gap there.
I guess I didn't technically make a pick. If I had to make a pick, I guess I'll take Yankees, but I really think it's a toss-up between those two.
So I'm just curious, make your case for the Yankees.
My case for the Yankees?
Yeah.
I really just comes down to Judge and Soto hitting back-to-back in the order. Like, I think Soto is going to be, I mean, as long as Judge stays healthy, Soto is going to be getting on base at, you know, the outrageous clip that he does. And then there's going to be so much pressure on people. Like, they're going to have to pitch to Judge as well, right? I mean, as long as, you know, Rizzo and LeMahieu. And I think with the Yankees, it really could go either way. But I feel like we're due for, you know, a Yankees evil empire year.
Yeah, you nailed it. I think it comes down to starting pitching with New York and how healthy it is. I know they got Nestor. They're pretty deep. He's going to start the season for them on opening day. But if Cole comes back and everybody else is firing on all cylinders, so Carlos Rodon had a terrible season. So I think if he bounces back, then the Yankees are going to be the favorites to run away with it. But if Baltimore continues to do what they did last season and the prospects just stay on this tear, it's going to be a ridiculous season for both clubs.
All right, let's do a bit of a speed run here through the rest of the divisions. NL East, I feel like we're all going to have the Braves.
Easy.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Braves.
Yeah, they're going to be good.
Yeah, they're top team most years. Added Chris Sale.
I mean, their offense is ridiculous.
Yeah, just explosive offense with Acuna and Albies and Riley and Olsen. Like, it's unbelievable. And, yeah, their pitching is good enough to get past the Phillies, even though maybe they might lose to the Phillies again in the playoffs. It's back-to-back years now. But I think the Braves win that division.
NL Central. My pick is going to be the Cubs.
NL Central, I think that's one of the tougher ones for me personally. I was going to take a swing and say the Reds, but now with recent injuries to TJ Friedl and the suspension Noelvi Marte, I think I'm going to have to give the edge to the Cubs. And it's also because I don't like the Cardinals this year. Their starting rotation is not that good.
They added Sonny Gray, right?
Sonny Gray, but then you also added a lot of like older veterans like Lance Lynn and Kyle Gibson. And you also have still Miles Michaelis. Like, it's not ideal in my opinion.
Yeah, but got rid of Tyler O'Neill too, right? He's in Boston now. They do have Jordan Walker. I think it ultimately for them comes down to how good are Goldschmidt and Arenado going to be. They've proven in their careers that they're absolute studs, but they are getting up there in age now.
Yeah, I see the Cardinals having a bounce back year. I think Sonny Gray will be a big picker for them as well. I think he's underrated, and I think he'll have another good season. For me, though, if I'm going to make my projection, I'm going to go with the Reds. I love the big red machine renaissance last year. I think they're such a young, exciting team. I can see them just, and you know, maybe it's some Ellie De La Cruz fandom sneaking in here as well, but I think they're great.
For fantasy purpose, I wouldn't mind that. I have Matt McClain, so.
No, I think the winner of this division, it's going to be a battle. It's going to be right around 87 wins, 86 wins for the top two teams, and I think it's going to be just an absolute slugfest to get in at the end of the season between at least three of them, similar to the AL East, but probably not at the 90 wins like the AL East will be. These guys will be a little lower, but it's gonna be tough. I'm going to go with the Cubs. I think Bellinger's going to have a crazy season. I think he's going to opt out, and I think he's going to get a bigger bag, but that's my take on the Central.
Yeah, so the Cardinals are the favorites, plus 160. AL West, I feel like it comes down to two, Astros or Rangers.
Ooh, are we just going to discount the Mariners?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I would.
Astros with Blake Snell, they have that division in the bag. Yeah. I'm not sure. The Rangers are probably poised to come back and have another great year. They've got a crazy, crazy lineup, the $1 billion at middle infield. I think they're going to be a good battle, again, right at the top between the two teams.
Yeah, I'm taking Astros.
Yeah, they did add Josh Hader too, right?
Yeah, I'm definitely taking Astros. So like, I think when you look across the league, it's pretty much always like Astros, Braves, Dodgers, top three. The way they've kind of approached team building and their organizational philosophies have really just brought those three teams to the forefront of baseball. So and I don't see that changing anytime soon.
I want to say the Rangers so bad because I'm sick and tired of seeing the Astros every single year just plow through the American League. But I have to give the edge to the Astros, and this might be the last year they actually have that run just because their prospect pipeline is, like, non-existent to the point everyone's getting slightly older. But, yeah, I think the starting rotation is still pretty good with Valdez and Verlander and Christian Javier, even have the upside of Hunter Brown. And, like Yordan Alvarez and Kyle Tucker and Altuve and Bregman. It's going to be a really solid year offensively, and also no one's going to talk about Yainer Diaz, but he's a really good offensive catcher. So I think I give it to the Astros, and the Rangers, I think they just have too many injuries in the starting rotation right now, so I think that's also the reason why I give the edge to the Astros.
All right, last division, AL Central. What do you guys got?
Okay, I'm going to go with a pick that I think I believe someone here shares with me. I'm going to go with the Tigers as a little bit of a sleeper pick. I just think they really came on last year. I think they've been developing some of these guys for years. I think Tarek Skubal is going to have a great year. I think Spencer Torkelson is going to hit 30 bombs. So, yeah, I'm going to take the Tigers.
Riley Green?
Riley Green's great.
Yeah, I'm still I like the Guardians. I feel like their pitching just always pulls through. They just find guys that always put up great years, like Gavin Williams last year, right? Tanner Beebe, Shane Bieber, Manuel Clase, one of the best relievers in baseball. And then you got J-Ram, right? Jose Ramirez, who's one of the best players in all of baseball. So, and bounce back season from Tristan McKenzie.
I think the Tigers are getting close. I think they're maybe 1 year away. I still have to give it to the Guardians personally. And it's also because of what Evan touched up on is their starting rotation looks really, really good with Shane Bieber, Tyner Bibee, Gavin Williams, and even have Tristan McKenzie, who's going to be coming back and having a full season, hopefully. The only thing with the Guardians is obviously their offense. It doesn't really have a lot of firepower outside of Jose Ramirez and Josh Naylor. Like, you have Ramon Laureano, who's going to be in the corner outfield and potentially DH role. But hey, like, there's a lot of players that are in the come up that could actually do really well. And one of those guys is from Mississauga. Besides from Josh Naylor, it's his brother, Bo Naylor. He not only is he a really good defensive catcher, but he also has a lot of has some really good contact skills, and he can also steal some bags as well.
Yeah, I think the Twins got to get a shout here as well. They're going to have a good year again, I think. They just keep hovering right where they've been for the last couple seasons, never making that big jump up. But I think they're going to be a sneak maybe to run away with it again. I also like the Tigers, like you mentioned, a lot of young talent there. Riley Green on my fantasy team, let's go. Big season out of him coming. And Tarik Skubal, I think, is one of the more interesting stories in the American League, pitching-wise as well. I'm really interested to watch him pitch some major league innings, more major league innings at least. It's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, so the Twins are the favorites at -125, then Guardians, then Tigers. And then Royals and White Sox are far behind.
Hey, Royals, they're going to get better.
Bobby Witt.
They're not there yet.
I agree, but betting-wise, they're far behind.
Right.
And, I mean, I think the Central is one of the most up-in-the-air divisions, both in the American League and the National League. The Central divisions are just, I mean, the National League Central especially, I think, you know, Cubs could win it, Reds could win it, the Cards could win it. I think even the Brewers could win it. I think it's kind of a four-team race there. Central in the AL, again, we were just, you know, taking Cleveland and Detroit, and hey, the Twins are still the betting favorites because three teams in the race there. AL East is the next one I would put in there as one of the most contested divisions. I think there's also four teams, you know, Yankees, Orioles, Rays, Jays, that all could potentially win that division. So I would say those are the top three divisions in terms of competition for the title.
Yeah, well, also, if you want to put it in betting perspective, those are three divisions where everyone's the closest, right? Just wanted to add one of my personal favorite bets. This does go back to the Toronto Blue Jays. FanDuel has a bet where you can wager when the dome will be open for the very first time. And so obviously the first series of the year against the Mariners, April 8th to 10th, is the favorite at -300. We're going to be there April 12th against the Rockies, +800, second series of the year.
A little bit of rain for +800. I'll take that.
I think the value is too good to pass up there. Right?
Yeah, I just love like some of these prop bets that FanDuel comes up with. Like, you could even wager on like mayoral elections when they happen sometimes in the city. Yeah, so I think that has immense value in my opinion.
Yeah.
Also, we're not financial betting advisors, but hey, if you take a swing and you lose, it's not on us.
Yeah, I think that's a great bet, Evan. I'm not a betting man, but sounds like a good one to me.
Pretty crazy start to the season. We got the home opener against the Mariners, then Looney Dog Night the next night, work from dome on the Wednesday, and then a Barrios Bobble Night on the Friday. Pretty crazy opening up.
So you get +800 and a Barrios Bobblehead.
What, yeah.
What more could you ask?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, and a Friday night game, that's like the perfect time to have a first roof open.
All right, so there's our divisional predictions and a little side bet thrown in there. We're going to be back next time with more Jays talk. We're going to be back with some more around the MLB. And yeah, we're really excited for the season to start. We might get into a little bit more prospect discussion next time. And another thing we might want to touch on is we also took a trip down to spring training as well, and I might get into some discussion about what the environment and atmosphere was like there a little bit. So that's been the first Bullpen Banter podcast. Yeah, thanks so much for listening, everybody.
Cheers.